1-1 pitch. Swing and a drive. Deep to right field. Way up there. Way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome once again to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill back with you. Thanks for being here once again. Wow, what a game it was last night. Game one of a four-game series with Chicago. Well, Lane McLennan talked about it 2 games ago. He talked about the rumbling and the offense rumble. They exploded. 13 runs on the board. We'll get to all the highlights in just a moment, and there's a lot of highlights to get to. But a big night for the Mariners, a big win in game one of the series. 3-0 on this homestand so far. So far, so good for the Mariners. Here's what we have for you in the podcast coming up. We've got the highlights. We have reaction after the ballgame. Dustin Ackley, Robinson Cano. Lots of numbers to throw your way. Very impressive stuff going on offensively for a couple of Mariners here the past, since July 1st especially. So we'll get you those. Also, we're going to hear from one of the real characters in the game of baseball right now, from the Chicago White Sox, their broadcaster, Ken Hawk Harrelson. That's coming up. He tells a great story about batting gloves, too, that you don't want to miss. It's really, really good stuff. That comes up. Aaron Goldsmith is going to sit down with Joe Beimel, one of the many great stories on the team this year. I mean, think about it. A season ago, he was toiling at AAA Gwinnett, and here he is pitching so well and been such a big part of what the Mariners have done this year. Louie continues with a snippet of his first press conference as Mariners manager. Louie going to spill into next week as well, as we'll hear everything that goes on over the weekend on Monday. Of course, he goes into the Mariners Hall of Fame on Saturday. So all that coming up on the podcast. But the offense really stealing the show yesterday. Lloyd McClendon talked about it before the game yesterday. The offense was rumbling, and it exploded in this ball game. A couple of back-to-back big ball games offensively. The Mariners take out the White Sox in game one of this series. We have a lot to get to. We'll head to the clubhouse, get reaction. The skipper coming up next as well. But let's get to these highlights. And it started early in this ball game. Dustin Ackley, who has just been absolutely blazing hot, he got the Mariners cooking in the very first inning.
Swing and a drive, yep. Deep to right center field, and this one is gone. Goodbye, baseball, in and out of the seats. In right center field, Moises Sierra going back, took a high leap, could not come up with it. In and out of the ballpark, and how about Dustin Ackley? A home run yesterday, and now a home run tonight. He's got 8 on the year.
1-0, Mariners lead early. And what shouldn't get lost in this ball game is Roenis Elias had a very good start. Pitched into the sixth, gave up just 2 earned runs. We talked about the matchup coming in being more difficult for him with all the righty power that the White Sox bring to the table against the lefty. But he was good and took over a lead in this ball game too in terms of rookies.
Here's the stretch and the pitch. Swing and a miss with a sweeping curveball for strike three. So Elias with his first strikeout of the ball game, 2 down for the White Sox here in the top of the second.
And he takes over the rookie lead for innings pitched this year. He passes Tanaka with 2/3 of an inning. So great job by Elias. And he was rolling early. He did walk someone in the second inning, but retired 6 of the first 7 hitters he saw. Went 1-2-3 in the third as well. 1-2-3 in the fourth as well. Meanwhile, the offense was just unbelievable. And it was Andy Chavez who went deep.
The 1-1. Chavez a swing and a high fly ball deep to right field. Holy smokes, going and going. Goodbye, baseball. Andy Chavez with his second home run of the season. He gets a hold of a 1-1 pitch from Scott Carroll. Gets it out to right field. Mike Zunino will score on in front of him. And the Mariners now lead the White Sox 3-0. Little Andy Chavez with a big swing.
3-0, the Mariners with the lead there. In the fifth inning, though, Rinus Elias working with the no-hitter, finally broken up by Chicago.
The 1-2 offer, swing and a line drive down the right field line for a base hit and toward the corner. Over to go get it. Chavez heading for second. Gillespie, the throw offline. Taylor has to go get it and in at second. Connor Gillespie with a double with one out here in the top of the fifth, and that's the first base hit off of Elias tonight.
He stayed stuck there. No runs scored in the fifth inning. The Mariners, though, in the bottom of the frame. Dustin Ackley on base again. A walk. The top two in the order lived on base in this one. Five times reaching base between the first two in the order. Robinson Cano, a big blast in the fifth.
The 3-1 pitch to Cano on the way. Swing and a high fly ball deep to right field. Going back, Sierra looking up, and he leaps. It's gone. Goodbye, baseball. Robinson Cano with his ninth home run of the season. This is a two-run shot with Ackley aboard. The Mariners' third home run of the ball game, and it's now the Mariners 5 and the White Sox nothing.
Playing big fly. Chicago, they'd hit a two-run home run in the sixth as well, but the Mariners' offensive juggernaut tonight just kept on rolling in the sixth inning as well. Dustin Ackley, another base hit to drive in two runs.
The 1-2, swinging a ground ball left side through. Gillespie down to his chest. Can't get to it well off the bag. Morrison scores. Right behind him, Zunino, the throw, gets out of Flowers' grasp. Zunino scores. That brings in two runs. Jackson first to third. Ackley plates a pair. And the Mariners now lead it 7-2 here in the sixth inning.
And at that point for Dustin Ackley, you go back to July 1st hitting .351 with four homers and 14 RBIs, 10 doubles as well. Absolutely blazing hot. Had another huge night for the Mariners in the second hole. A big part of what happened tonight for the M's. And they just kept pouring it on. Logan Morrison contributing in the seventh inning, driving in a run.
The 1-2, swinging an opposite field liner towards the alleyway in left center field. It drops in for a base hit. Seager to second, and he wheels it to third base. Seager makes a turn. He comes home. Morrison into second. Here's the throw. It's late. Seager scores all the way from first. The Mariners have hung 9 runs on the White Sox tonight, and there's nobody out in the seventh inning. Morrison brings home Seager.
And they just kept on chugging, too. Some beanballs along the way. Lloyd McClendon gets tossed as well in the eighth inning. But Kyle Seager capped this one off in style in the eighth.
Next offer, swing and a drive deep to right field. Off the bat of Seager. Goodbye, baseball. Kyle Seager with his 17th home run of the year. It's the Mariners' fourth home run of the ball game. They tack on two more here in the bottom of the eighth inning. And it's now the Mariners' 13 and the White Sox 3.
Lucky number 13, 13-3. The Mariners take the game. Kyle Seager now hitting .352 with 14 homers and 48 RBIs here at Safeco Field this year. That's incredible. How about this, too? 56 of his 70 ribbies have come in Mariner wins. Two more in this one as well. Two more, including that's included in the 56. Those are impressive numbers. Kyle Seager has been so big for the M's offensively, especially here at Safeco Field. And Seager wasn't alone. Of course, Robinson Cano having really a monster run. You look at it since July 1st, Robinson Cano is putting up just crazy numbers. He's batting .373 since that time. Best in the American League. An on-base percentage of .466, also best in the American League. He's on pace now to hit .334 this season with 200 hits, 38 doubles, 13 homers, 91 ribbies, and 11 stolen bases. I don't use on pace very much because so much can change, you know, when you're talking about in the course of a month or so. But I think it's instructive to really point out the kind of season Robinson Cano is having. And it is a wonderful offensive season. And here he is after the ballgame talking about this win and what it means.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like I say, those that you know, kind of games that or the offense sometimes you don't do in the beginning of the season, but there's some, you know, somewhere, somehow, later in the season you're doing it, and then, you know, and good thing is working up at the right time. And this is when really every game really counts and matters. And we want to be, that's what we want to play. We want to play little games. And, you know, like Andy Bond in the sixth or seventh inning, I don't remember what inning. You know, those the little games, that's where everything starts. And that's what you're looking for as a team. You got to play the little game and be able to do the little thing. We use the little thing, and like, big things can happen.
You said you've been like this for a week. What's been different in that week?
Well, I mean, you know, when the offense together, there's nothing that you can say, you know, why we put this together or that together. There's a lot of balls that we've been hitting hard just right at people, guys. Even myself, when we played the Braves, had two left field the first game that, you know, Bonifacio caught both of them. So those part of the games, and we just got to stay focused. I mean, enjoy tonight, but be ready to play tomorrow.
You look like you got more excited over Andy's homer than anything else.
Oh, yeah, I mean. I think, you know what, like, it just that it gives us more, you know, we went ahead of the game, and it, especially giving him a beat so he can pitch that what he want and we'll lose. It's not the same thing when you pinch 1-0 to 3-0. And, you know, that's what we want. We want to score early because we haven't done that in the whole year, you know, consistently. We just been one game that we score 5 and then the next 2 games. We just get 1 or 2 runs, so, you know, hopefully we continue doing the same thing.
And Dustin Ackley, a big ball game as well. You go back to that same July 1st date, and Dustin Ackley putting up monster numbers, hitting .351 since July 1st with 4 homers, 14 RBIs, 10 doubles. He's really been stroking the ball all over the yard. And here's Dustin Ackley on last night and what it all means.
So I think everybody's starting to click on all cylinders. I think it was We thought it was just a matter of time, and I mean, everybody you saw from the fourth inning on, we scored runs, and I mean, that's what it takes. You got to be consistent, and we're starting to be consistent.
You get things going with the home run. We've seen 4 in the last 7 days from you. Just a matter of everything feeling right with you?
I think so. I think it just swinging the good pitches. My swings felt great the last month, so I mean, I just attribute it to that. I mean, I'm trying to take the bad ones and swing at the good ones, and it's been working out.
You're expecting good things to happen at the plate right now.
Yeah, I think that's what it's all about. I think no matter what your swing feels like, no matter how you feel, if you expect good things to happen, a lot of times they will. And, I mean, that's a big thing for me going forward, just a mental approach.
You've been hitting second for a little bit right now. What kind of difference are you seeing with Robinson Cano in front of you?
I mean, yeah, he's been big. I mean, hitting in front of him and hitting behind Austin Jackson, I mean, I couldn't ask for a better spot to be. And with Cano, the way he's been swinging the bat, I mean, he doesn't swing any bad stuff. He takes good swings when he needs to, like tonight. He got the big home run. And, yeah, he's just been like that all year, and we don't expect anything different.
Got a nice long homestand. You've got a team that's in front of you coming in a couple of days, and you've got an opportunity to do some things at home. How do you look at this week for this team?
I think it's huge. I think from here on out, everything is huge. Every game's important, and especially if we do well this month, next month's going to be huge because it's pretty much every game's in the division. So, yeah, it's going to be a big stretch from here on out.
There it is. Ack-a-tack, Paddock had it for the Mariners. See, he really got it done. And, of course, they even got a home run from Andy Chavez as well. Very rare, but very timely for the Mariners to help extend the lead early on.
What can I say? That doesn't happen very often. But, you know, when you hit the ball good, anything can happen.
Well, I don't expect the same sort of game at Safeco Field tonight. This should be an excellent ball game. Jose Quintana, I think one of the more underrated pitchers in the game of baseball. I refer to him as Iwakuma Central because he doesn't get the kind of recognition that he probably should. And ironically, going against Iwakuma in this one. So this is a really great pitching matchup from Safeco Field. Lefty on the hill. So new righty bats in the lineup. We'll see if that helps the cause as the Mariners take on the White Sox in game 2 of the series. Really, really good pitching matchup. Quintana, Iwakuma from Safeco Field, game 2 of the series. Mariners looking to take game 2. We talked about coming in, trying to take 3 of 4. That's the goal against the White Sox before Toronto heads in. Felix Hernandez on the hill on Monday against the Jays, which is just, it's going to be flat awesome, especially if the Mariners can take 3 of 4 heading in. And they're off to a really good start, a big, big night offensively. So a big piece of what the Mariners have done, especially out of the bullpen, Joe Bimel. I wrote about it too, 710sports.com. Hi, Heath from the Hill blog. You can see I wrote about the bullpen and just the kind of historic run they've been on. And Joe Bimel has been a big part of that. And here's Aaron Goldsmith with Joe Bimel and just the journey he has made in a very short time.
You know, Joe, with the Braves in town, it makes me think back to last year when you were with their AAA club in Gwinnett. And at that point, of course, somebody coming back from injury, trying to get back to the major leagues, did you think at this point, did you have any concept that less than a year later you'd be back in the major leagues and having just such tremendous success with historically one of the best bullpens the Mariners have ever had?
I didn't really think that far in advance, but I was thinking I was going to have this success last year, my first year back. But, you know, I went to AAA with them and, you know, just wasn't pitching that well and kind of had a lot of ups and downs with my first year back from surgery. And, you know, I thank them a lot for giving me that opportunity to kind of work through those kinks there. And they easily could have just said, you know, we're just going to release you and let you go, but they kept me there, and I was able to work through those things. And it's, you know, I attribute that to the success I'm having this year.
And of course, this year there really haven't been any ups and downs at all. It's been steady Eddie basically since opening day. Is that basically because you've had that 1 year since the surgery to really figure everything out?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm finally healthy. Last year there were days I came to the field and was, you know, I was like, man, I feel great. And then I'd show up the next day and be like, oh, my God, I need surgery again. You know, it was that extreme. And I'd go home and, like, tell my wife, and she had to go through the ups and downs and was kind of like, what the heck is going on? But, you know, I haven't had that this year. I've been healthy the whole year, feeling great every single day. So it's been really nice.
And as we referenced earlier, it's not that you're just succeeding in the major leagues, but you're succeeding with a group of relievers that are setting the tone in Major League Baseball. How much fun have you had this year?
It's been one of my most fun years in the big leagues. You know, we've got a great group of guys here. We're winning. Our bullpen is the best bullpen I've ever been a part of. So it's fun to go out there and watch these guys day in and day out get the job done and, you know, have the success we've had as kind of a unit out there.
And, of course, you came to the Mariners in spring training, not guaranteed a spot on the roster. You break camp with the Mariners. You've had this tremendous success. So with all that in mind, what has this season meant to you?
It's been awesome. You know, I always say I plan on pitching till I'm 50. So last year and the year before that were just kind of a bump in the road. So I got a lot of time to go yet. But
is that a serious comment?
Absolutely. I truly believe that.
And how old are you now?
I am 37.
So you think you've got another strong 13 years in you?
Absolutely. Jamie Moyer can do it, throwing 80 and starting games. I feel like I can come in and get one guy out. I mean, I'm not down to 80 yet. So once I get there, I might have to drop down sidearm or throw a knuckleball or something. But I totally intend on doing that.
With that in mind, how have you evolved since you broke in with the Pirates to today?
Just, you know, a lot smarter as far as pitching-wise. You know, maybe not that smart off the field, but I'd like to think I've wised up a little there also. But I'm just, you know, I know my strengths and I know my weaknesses. And in the past, where I might have, you know, went out there and thought I was a strikeout pitcher or tried to throw 100 when I was only throwing 89, you know, I realize I can't do that, and I've just got to stick with my strengths.
Are you going to keep growing the beard until you're 50?
No. This thing's coming off probably the day after the season is over.
You can't cut it in season, right? That'd be a bad idea.
Yeah, that would be terrible. I would never do that. Maybe if I wasn't doing very well, I would have shaved it off, you know, a little while ago. But I'm going to definitely keep it until at least we win the World Series.
And the wife's okay with it?
Yeah, she doesn't really have a choice.
It's interesting. You look at the bullpen right now for the Mariners, and we've talked about how good it is, but there's a cast of characters that basically cover every point on the map in terms of age, in terms of background, experience. And you seem to be one of the guys that a lot of relievers talk to as you're someone that they really draw a lot from and look up to in a number of ways. What do you see your role in the bullpen being when you're not on the mound?
I mean, I'm definitely the old guy, so
I didn't want to say it like that.
So I think, you know, like anybody, if you you look up to your dad, he's older, wiser version of yourself. So you want to take as much as you can from him and kind of pick through and sift through what you can take and incorporate it into your own life, or in this case, your own, you know, pitching game. But, you know, we do have such a wide variety of people down there, and it's been fun just to watch everyone gel together and mesh together. And, you know, we have fun every single day out there, but we also have a very rare confidence that I haven't seen, like, in a unit. You know, we literally feel like we are the best, and we think we're the best, and we say we're the best, and then we go out and we do the best job possible, and it's worked out this year.
How much is there to the chemistry of a bullpen in terms of personalities meshing and gelling when you're not on the mound, but when you're just sitting there watching the game?
I think it's huge. You know, if you're out there and you're comfortable and you're feeling good, you're going to go out and pitch well. If you're maybe a little timid out there and can't stand the people who are around you, you know, that makes it a little more difficult day in and day out, because we're out on our own little island every single day. And if you can't get along, it's going to be hard to, you know, do that every single day.
Joe, it's been a blast watching you pitch this year. We're going to hold you to that 50-year-old mark. Next 13 years, hopefully in a Mariners uniform. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And there it is, Joe Beimel, Mariners reliever. As we hand things over to Aaron once again, he's going to talk to Ken Hawk Harrelson, get a look at the White Sox, what they're going through right now, and also a little bit of batting gloves history as well. So here it is, Aaron Goldsmith.
Hawk, the White Sox come to Seattle at a record of 55-60, and a little bit in the mix in the wild card race if you look at those standings. Is this team where you thought they would be at this point of the season?
You know, it's hard to say, Aaron. It really is, because of the fact we know we had some good players coming out of spring training, some good young players. We didn't know Abreu was going to be this good. You know, we didn't know Adam Eaton was going to be this good. And I can tell you one thing right now, just to probably capsulize it for you. If we had your bullpen, we'd be in first place. We really would. I mean, that's how good we played. Our bullpen, today the game has changed from my culture, from my days of playing. It used to be you're only going to go as far as your starters would take you. Today, you're only going to go as far as your bullpen will take you. I don't care how good your starters are. I don't care how good your hitting is. If your bullpen doesn't get it done, you're going to lose, because the starters aren't going to complete 25, 26, 28 games a year. In fact, I think the Detroit Tigers have 4 complete games all season. So you guys probably don't have more than that, with the exception of the King. But, no, it's the battle of bullpens, and we just have not had good luck out of our bullpen.
You bring up Jose Abreu. He becomes the first player to ever win Player of the Month and Rookie of the Month twice in the same season. What's it been like watching him hit this year?
History. History, really. I mean, we're watching history almost each and every day out there. The young man, you saw him in spring training, and we knew that Kenny Williams, I've never heard Kenny gush about a ball player like this ever. And he was just absolutely ecstatic that we were able to sign him, because there were 5 other teams that made bids of $60 or more million. We got him for 68. But he carries himself like a veteran. He's one of the leaders already in the clubhouse. The first thing that impressed me about him in spring training was how he could take the inside fastball, keep his hands in, hit it hard, very hard, and keep it fair. You don't see many rookies who are strong able to do that. And as time goes on, the adjustments that he's able to make from pitch to pitch, from at-bat to at-bat, you don't see rookies able to do that very often. He's just showing us all the time that he's got more in the tank, so to speak. And it's just amazing how he's been. He's a good first baseman. I heard he was a bad first baseman, you know, in spring training. And I don't know who ever told me that, but if it's a scout, he ought to be fired, because the guy can play first base.
Something happened Tuesday night in Chicago that the baseball world might not have been ready for. Adam Dunn took the mound for the first time in his career. A man with 457 career home runs pitched an inning in a blowout loss against the Rangers. Hawk, tell us, what was that like?
It was fun. I mean, you know, you got to have the right manager to be able to do that, too. And we got the right manager. Robin, he's terrific. And when Adam went in, I talked to him after the game, and he said his whole career he's always wanted to toe the rubber. And he finally got to do it. And he said he went down there when he was warming up to go in. He said he threw about 10 pitches, and all of a sudden he goes, "Whew, I don't know if I can do this." So he threw a pitch, a fastball. He looked at the clock out there, and it says 82. And he's, what am I doing out here? You know, but he did well, and we had a lot of fun with it.
But he gave up one run in one inning, so he has a career 9 earned run average. Suppose it could be a little bit worse. Hawk, if we can go back to your playing days for a moment, you really are the father of the batting glove. Can you tell us the story about how you created something that has become an absolute staple in the game?
Well, necessity is the mother of invention. And I was a kid, I was platooning in Kansas City, and the Yankees came to play. And that's the only time we ever drew any people in Kansas City, was the Yankees would come in. So I wasn't going to play that day. They were going to pitch a right-hander named Jim Coates. So I went to play golf. Sammy Esposito and Gino Cimoli would play Ted Bosfield and myself. My first two years in the big leagues, you know, the minimum salary is $6,000. I actually made more money playing golf, shooting pool, and arm wrestling than I did playing Major League Baseball. So I went out. We played 27 holes of golf that day. So I get to the ballpark. I went right from the golf course to the ballpark. And I look in the lineup, I'm in there. The Yankees made a switch, they're going to pitch Whitey Ford. So now I'm in there hitting third. So don't you know, I'm taking batting practice, and I wore a little blister right there on my ring finger by the 27 holes of golf. And I remembered I had my golf glove up in my jeans up in the clubhouse. So I went up there and got that. The game starts. I come to bat in the bottom of the first inning, and I got this flaming red golf glove on. I want to tell you, Yankees wore me out. They were on me so bad, I can't even say what they were calling me and everything else. Don't you know, Whitey hung me a curveball, and I hit it about 450 over that left center field fence for a home run. Well, about the sixth inning, I come back up there again, and they're still on me, but not as bad as they were. Don't you know, he hung me another one, and I hit it over that left center field fence again. So the next day, the Yankees come out of the clubhouse, and they all had red golf gloves on. Mantle had the clubby go buy a couple of dozen golf gloves, and they all put them on, and that's how the hitting glove got started.
Frank Thomas, the Big Hurt, was inducted into the Hall of Fame just a couple of weeks ago. And Hawk, you know this very well. It's pretty rare that somebody gets not only a mention but almost a paragraph dedicated in a Hall of Fame speech. But Frank Thomas, Hawk, went out of his way to thank you for giving him the nickname the Big Hurt, and how much that meant to him and his career and what has turned out to be his legacy. How'd you come up with that nickname?
Well, he had a stretch there that Tom Pachorik was my partner at the time, and Wimpy and I were watching him. And when he first came up, his first hit was a triple in Milwaukee. And then we watched him for a couple of weeks. And I said, Wimpy, I said, what are we watching here? He said, what? I said, this guy, think back now, isn't this guy 203-1 every time he comes to the plate? Wimpy said, yeah, he is. So you don't see rookies 2031. You see veterans 2031. You know, your Yastrzemskis and your K-Lines and your guys like that. And then later on, he got in the streak. Every time he swung the bat, he was just hurting it. I mean, he was just killing it. And I kept saying he heard it. And all of a sudden, he hit a home run in a home one day, and I'm watching him go around first base, and it just blurted out, the Big Hurt. And it turned out to be, you know, a pretty good nickname for him.
Hawk, it's a pleasure to catch up with you. Welcome to Seattle. Thank you so much for the time.
I love this town. I wish we had your bullpen, though.
And finally, we'll end things here with a little snippet from the first press conference from Lou Piniella. Pretty great stuff, what he laid out, and certainly what ended up happening. And again, when we are back together on Monday, we'll have a lot from over the weekend with Lou Piniella, some with the ceremony, too. So I really look forward to that. So here we go, Lou Piniella from this very first press conference.
It's a ball club that's not too far away from really putting a viable product on the field that everybody in the Seattle and the Northwest can be proud of. Winning is an attitude just like losing is. And what we plan to do here as a staff is to bring that winning attitude.
See you later!